I don't think beetles are diverse not only in the number of species, but also in the ways that they exploit plants. And it's well established that the evolution of Phytophagous insects in general is very closely tied to their host use. And feeding internally or externally or feeding on different types of host plant tissue clearly present very different challenges and opportunities for insect larvae. You might expect that although these habits are generally evolutionarily conserved, you might expect that when transitions do occur, they would have strong and predictable consequences for evolution. So the buprestids are a nice group to investigate these kinds of questions about host use transitions because they include leaf mining groups and root feeders as well as the well-known wood borers. It's a large beetle family with about 15,000 species in over 500 genera currently. They're distributed worldwide. They feed on a wide variety of host plants, and they're probably best known for their beautiful metallic coloring. And as with most taxonomic classifications, there's been a lot of debate in this group. Oops. I'll be using the Bellamy classification, the most recent one, for the rest of this talk. And notice that he has elevated the Schizopodidae to family level rank and divided the Buprestidae into six subfamilies. And this my work is the first large-scale phylogeny of the group, and it will shed some light on this classification scheme. So most of the Buprestidae are wood borers, including some important pests like the invasive emerald ash borer. So there's a significant number of leaf miners in the family as well, and there are 11 genera that have about 2,000 species described. One of these genera is Paratracheis, which is a polycestine genus, and the other 10 are currently placed in a single tribe within the Agrolinae. And just to show some of the diversity in the group, on the left are some schizopodids, and you can see they have a slightly different body form than the typical bullet-shaped buprestids. And the schizopodids and the julidines differ from the rest of the Buprestoria in that they feed externally on roots as larvae. And the julidines have sometimes been suggested to be the most basally branching group within the buprestids. Or sorry, the julidines, yeah. And this would suggest that root feeding might be the ancestral feeding habit in the group. On the left are some polycestines, and these have alternatively been proposed as the most primitive buprestids. On the right are Buprestine and Acrysochroin. And the species in these subfamilies are mainly wood boring. They feed on living or dead tissue in trees or woody shrubs. And then there's that one genus of leaf miners in the polycestines, as I mentioned. And the Agrolinae contain the genus Agrylus, which is the largest animal genus with about 3,000 described species. And species within this subfamily are largely borers just under the bark of trees, but there are also some that are borers in twigs or small branches. There are some that mine the stems of grasses. And then, as I mentioned, there's this tribe of leaf mining taxa. And although the leaf miners in the Agrolinae have been lumped into one tribe, there's reason to believe that there have actually been multiple origins of the leaf mining habit within this subfamily. And Hespenhide, Bellamy, and others have suggested that the leaf mining genera within the Agrolinae have been placed in this tribe based largely on convergent adult morphology. And you can see the leaf miners they share a lot of morphological characteristics, most obviously dorsiventral flattening and broadening that you see in these two lower rows here, as opposed to the typical elongate, narrow Agroline form. And if leaf mining has arisen multiple times within this subfamily, provides a nice opportunity to examine the kinds of evolutionary patterns and consequences and look for ecological and morphological correlates of transitions in feeding habit. Here I show that the larvae with different feeding habits also vary in their morphology. On the left is a wood borer with this enlarged head and elongate narrow abdomen, as opposed to the leaf mining larva on the right, which has a gradually tapering abdomen and is also flattened. And you might expect, because of ecological differences in feeding on different parts of the plants, that there would be these expected differences in morphology in different feeding gills. And these two pictures on the left show some of the obvious differences in the ecological conditions encountered by these different larvae. And there are several kinds of ecological consequences you might expect related to shifts in feeding habit. For example, in the buprestids, although most taxa are specialized on their host plants, the leaf miners seem to be more narrowly specialized on their host plants. Also, you might expect differences in the ranges of available hosts. For example, leaf miners might be able to gain access to herbaceous plants that would have been previously unavailable in different feeding modes. And there are also differences in the frequency and types of natural enemies that different feeding guilds experience. For example, wood borers might be more likely to be exposed to fungal pathogens than leaf miners. And there are also differences in the parasitism rates by parasitoids in different feeding guilds. So as you might expect, externally feeding larvae are subject to high levels of parasitism by parasitoids because they're exposed on the plant. Internal feeders like borers and gallers have lower rates of parasitism, which isn't surprising because they are protected by this thick plant tissue, whereas leaf miners have the worst of both worlds because they're protected only by a very thin layer of plant tissue, but they also have no way to escape the parasites by dropping off the leaf. And you can see, if I can point, that the leaf miners actually have rates of parasitism by parasitoids that are higher than the external feeders. So knowledge about these different physical and ecological conditions encountered by different feeding guilds leads to some hypotheses about evolutionary changes that might accompany these kinds of transitions. So first, you might expect that shifts in host use habit would be accompanied by changes in morphology, so that if a host use habit evolved multiple times within a group, you would see convergent morphological evolution. And you can also make some predictions about the consequences for evolutionary rates following transitions in host use habit. For example, if parasitoids are important in driving host shifts, you would expect that leaf miners might have more frequent host shifts and also subsequent diversification. And I'm going to talk about the first of these hypotheses today. So to address any of these hypotheses, you need a well-resolved phylogeny of the group Hostoidea. And with this phylogeny, I'll be able to address the classification questions and also to identify transitions in larval host use habit, particularly within the Agrilinae, in order to examine the evolutionary consequences of these kinds of transitions. So the first questions to ask are the Agriline leaf miners monophyletic? And if not, how many origins of leaf mining have there been within the subfamily? And have there been any reversals from leaf mining to other host use habits? And for this analysis, I used about 5,000 base pairs of sequence data for four genes. And I've included 88 taxa in this preliminary analysis. I will be including more taxa later, but this does include representatives of all the subfamilies and 8 of the 11 leaf mining genera. And I analyzed the data using multiple methods, and I'll be presenting the Bayesian result today. So here is the Bayesian tree from this analysis with the posterior probabilities above the branches. And I've color-coded the subfamilies here, and there are a few things to point out. First, the single schizopodid that I included in the analysis does come out as sister to the monophyletic buprestidae, which is consistent with its current placement or current rank as a family. Mm-hmm. And you can see that the polycestines branch off next, and the julidines actually fall within this large clade that contains what looks like a paraphyletic buprestinae chrysocroini. And the agrilines are the only group in this analysis to come out as monophyletic. The polycestines are largely monophyletic with the exception of the genus Mastogenius, which the placement of that genus has actually been questionable previously. So here I've highlighted the leaf mining taxa in green. You can see that the paratracheus does come out with the polycystine, and the remaining taxa do fall within the agrilinae. And zeroing in on the agriline clade, you can see that there is a lack of resolution within the subfamily. So I can't at this point quantify the number of transitions to leaf mining. However, I can say confidently that there have been multiple origins of the leaf mining habit. And to test this, I searched the set of about 15,000 post-Burnin Bayesian trees, and I found no trees with a monophyletic clade that included only in all of the leaf mining taxa. And as a more conservative test, I performed the same kind of constraint test, but I included the taxa that grouped with the leaf miners in strongly supported clades. And again, I found no trees that contain monophyletic clades with all of those taxa. So this strongly suggests that there have been multiple origins of the leaf mining habit, and potentially some reversals. And in conclusion, the Agrilinae and Polycystinae are largely monophyletic with the exception of that one enigmatic genus, and the relationships with the other subfamilies may need some reassessment. The leaf-mining agrilines are not monophyletic, which suggests that there have been multiple origins of the habit. And it also suggests that the morphological similarity of those genera is probably due to convergent morphological evolution. And I'm continuing to add additional taxa and assess the analysis parameters. I'm also working on a morphological study of the genus. And once I can identify those transitions in a host use habit on a phylogeny, I'll be able to address more of the evolutionary questions surrounding these shifts. And I'd like to particularly acknowledge Chuck Bellamy, who's been working with me on this project, and also many collectors who contributed specimens. Thank you.